Welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Gary's mayor, Jerome Prince, plans to sign an executive order to establish a police reform commission that will propose meaningful changes to the police department. Indiana is moving into phase four of Governor Eric Holcomb's Back on Track plan. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with representatives from the Lake Area United Way, as well as the American Red Cross, about a request for Lake County residents to report flooding or sewage damage due to the recent storms. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Indiana Court of Appeals determined Wednesday a lawsuit filed in 2017 by more than 300 East Chicago residents seeking damages against a group of companies tied to the lead contamination on their properties decades ago will go forward. The court found in favor of the Calumet neighborhood residents who lived within the USS Lead Superfund site in their lawsuit against a group of companies, the US EPA. Has held responsible for lead contamination in that section of East Chicago. The Post-Tribune reports the defendants sought relief on three grounds. First, claiming the Indiana Tort Claims Act immunized the state defendants, that plaintiffs' claims were barred by the statute of limitations, and finally, whether plaintiffs pleaded facts sufficient to state a claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress. The Court of Appeals ruled against defendants in all three areas and affirmed the trial court's denial of the state defendant's motion for judgment. The suit seeks damages to resident property caused by the contamination and for causing emotional distress. And according to court documents, residents say they have been subjected to decades of toxic contamination. As residents learned about the levels of contamination and about the inaction and failure to inform them of that, it caused anxiety among the residents. The suit alleges their property values have plummeted and they cannot sell their homes. The residents are represented by the Alvarez Law Office in Crown Point, as well as Pavlik Law in Indianapolis.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
After several attempts at a resolution of an impending wage claim, various former City of Portage employees are still without wages that were earned through January 1st, 2020. The funds, which were deposited on January 4th, 2020, were withdrawn from each of the employees' bank accounts. According to Christopher A. Buckley, counsel for the group dubbed former Portage employees, despite receiving a letter sent via certified mail April 30th to each of the board members' home addresses, the City of Portage Board of Works has yet to place the matter for hearing on the board's official agenda or take any official action. The attorney goes on to say that after several attempts to communicate with the city has ceased all communication with the former employees as well as their legal counsel. Currently, the group of employees are demanding a combined sum of $28,034.26, which they say represents wages actually due. If the city denies or refuses to take action on the claim, pursuant to Indiana law, their claims could triple if a lawsuit is filed, and the city will be forced to incur substantial legal fees as well as become liable for the employees' accumulating attorney fees.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Elected Gary officials are planning to re-examine how the city's police department operates after George Floyd's death energized a movement and pushed for nationwide calls for reform. The Times reports that on Sunday, June the 7th, hundreds of people rallied at Gary City Hall to call for an end to systematic racism, police violence, police brutality, injustice, inequality, and discrimination.
Jackson. Mayor Jerome Prince pledged on Monday to sign an executive order establishing a police reform commission that will propose meaningful changes to the city's police department. It will be made up of civic and business leaders, community activists, faith leaders, and community organizations.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
After more than 2 months of a shutdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic, the YWCA of Northwest Indiana is scheduled to reopen Monday, June 15th. According to Executive Director Karen Jones, the relaunching of services will be gradual and phased in with precautions in place to keep members safe from the potential spread of the COVID-19 virus. In addition to the opening of the fitness center, summer day camp for youth begins June 15th as well, and the pool will be open for lap swimming only. Jazzercise classes, as well as weekly Wednesday line dancing classes, will also restart the week of June 15th. Childcare services, which are already operational, will continue for essential workers. Programs for senior citizens, including congregate Meals on Wheels, will begin July 6th. For more information about the YWCA of Northwest Indiana, visit www.yca.org or call 219-881-9922.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana will enter the next stage of its reopening plan a couple days early. Stage 4 of the Back on Track plan allows groups of up to 250 people to gather. Retail stores no longer have capacity limits, though the state still urges proper social distancing. Governor Eric Holcomb says some locations will now get their first opportunity to reopen to the public since the pandemic began.
Cultural and entertainment tourism sites, such as museums and zoos and aquariums, are all up to 50% of capacity. Movie theaters, bowling alleys open at 50%.
Bars and nightclubs can now also open at 50% capacity. So too can amusement and water parks and playgrounds. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says parents still need to take precautions with their kids at those public locations.
Carry that hand sanitizer along with you. Encourage your children to wear masks if they can, especially if they're on the merry-go-round with another 5 or 6 kids. Encourage them to social distance, but I know they're probably not going to do that very well.
Box says parents should try to avoid feeding their children at a playground.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Bureau of Motor Vehicles will soon reopen to walk-in customers at its branches statewide. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports it will do so June 15th as the state is set to enter the next phase of its reopening plan.
The BMV first reopened to in-person business in May, but it was restricted to appointment only. Now, the agency will allow walk-in customers at its branches, most of which are open Tuesday through Saturday. It will still limit the number of people inside at one time, marking positions outside where people can wait in line. BMV employees that deal with the public will still be required to wear masks, and the state encourages all in-person customers to do so as well. The agency still isn't offering driving skills tests, however. It says it's finalizing a timeline for when it will resume those exams. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Educators and local leaders still have questions about how to reopen schools despite new guidance from the state. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains the state's top school official is pointing to local health departments for answers.
School leaders have more clarity about what the state recommends they do to safely reopen, and many have concerns about a lack of funding and resources. During a webinar with school leaders Tuesday, Schools Chief Jennifer McCormick echoed the governor and state health commissioner's past comments on how closely they expect schools to follow the guidelines. She says it's largely up to local health departments to decide if schools are doing enough.
Do not forget that ultimately the health department in your area can shut you down.
McCormick says the governor plans to buy 2 million masks to distribute to schools, but she says her department is still reviewing how that will be done. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's casinos have been given the green light to reopen after COVID-19 shut them down for nearly 3 months. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports the state's gaming commission says they can open to the public at reduced capacity beginning June 15th.
Casinos were required to submit health and safety plans before the state would allow them to reopen. Those plans were detailed. For instance, employees, patrons, and vendors will undergo daily health screenings, and employees can't be penalized for missing work if they have COVID symptoms or test positive for the virus. The number of gaming positions is significantly reduced, with additional limits on the number of players at table games. And those table game players, along with all employees on casino floors, must wear masks. The reopening plans submitted to the state also included procedures for regular and deep cleaning and disinfecting throughout the casinos. Gaming Commission agents will conduct what the state calls pre-opening reviews to ensure each casino complies with its safety plan. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana hopes to at least double its COVID-19 testing capacity in the next month. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports that's possible through a new partnership between the state, Eli Lilly, and the Indiana Hospital Association.
Lilly, the state, and the IHA formed a lab network across Indiana, initially comprised of 10 facilities, including the Indiana State Department of Health's. Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says those labs are already running COVID-19 tests, but their capacity is restricted because of limited supplies of reagents and equipment.
The network will leverage the state's buying power to more efficiently compete for supplies, equipment, and for reagents with both the national and international manufacturers of those items.
Box says to launch the network, the state bought $60 million worth of testing reagents. Participating labs will then purchase the supplies from the state. Box says once the reagents arrive, beginning in early July, Indiana will double its current testing capacity. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with the Lake Area United Way's Vice President of Community Impact, Andrea Prue-Brunecki, and American Red Cross Executive Director, Kristen Marlowe Kellerman.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Besides the coronavirus pandemic, many people in Lake County are dealing with another problem, and that is because of Mother Nature, and in particular about the recent flooding that's happened for all the rains that we had back in April going into May as well. And now the Lake Area United Way and the American Red Cross here in Lake County are helping those residents who've been affected by the recent flooding. We have with us Andrea Prue-Brunecki, who is the Vice President of Community Impact for the Lake Area United Way, and the Executive Director of the American Red Cross here in Lake County, Kristen Marlowe Kellerman. Ladies, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I'll leave it up to you, Andrea. You can kind of give us an idea, at least the situation that we're in, and how the United Way is partnering with the American Red Cross in helping offer some relief, at least in a way, for helping people that can get the disaster relief that they really, really need.
Thanks, Chris. We have a very, very strong partnership with the Red Cross and with other community organizations that activate during disasters in Northwest Indiana. And that's comprised of local United Ways, the Red Cross, emergency management, and other helping organizations. And so that COAD, Community Organizations Active in Disaster, is really facilitating the reporting part. So residents in Lake County that have experienced flood damage to their homes are encouraged to go online to report that flood damage.
Mm-hmm.
And the online address, Chris, is www.in211.org.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say that again. It's www.in211.org. And we are using the information on the top-hand corner, top-right corner of that website. There is a tab that says Lake County Disaster Reporting. And so if a resident in Lake County clicks on that, they will be able to file a report about the damage that their home has experienced.
Mm-hmm.
If residents do not have access to the internet, which is entirely possible, I would encourage them to call the Northwest Indiana COAD office, which is, the number is 219-262-0059. That's 219-262-0059. And they will be able to obtain a paper copy. You'll just need to leave your name and address, and you will get a paper copy of that reporting form. We also want to encourage homeowners to reach out to their insurance companies as soon as possible to see what kind of coverage they might be eligible for if they have water damage.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it has been the Red Cross and also the North Township trustee who have been on the ground helping homeowners get some relief. And I know that Kristen can talk about that.
No, please do.
The American Red Cross is one of the organizations, along with Lake Area, Porter County, United Way, and as Andrea said, other agencies, that is part of this COAD, this Community Organizations Active in Disaster. And Red Cross's role typically is to come in at the onset. We do disaster preparedness, but then also immediate disaster response, to come in and provide that immediate short-term recovery piece. So folks that are displaced from an event such as this, so if their home was unlivable due to the flooding, the Red Cross would be the agency and organization that would help them find shelter. We also would facilitate or lead the feed charge for folks that need access to immediate food resources through their the experience they've had with the disaster. So immediately, as you said, Chris, you know, we had a culmination of all of these floodwaters with this downpour that happened Memorial Day weekend on Saturday evening. And we started receiving at the Red Cross calls from homeowners that were saying, or residents, I should say, don't have to be homeowners, they can be renters.
Right.
Folks where their homes were taking on water and they weren't sure what to do. So in a disaster like that, they know to call the Red Cross. So we started seeing an increased number in phone calls. So we immediately connected with the Emergency Management Agency here in Lake County. And it didn't appear to be widespread. So at that point, we really start doing something called damage assessment. At the same time, we immediately start working with these clients to see what their immediate short-term disaster recovery needs are. Do they need shelter? Do they need food? Do they need emergency supplies? By Sunday, I received a call from Frank Mervan, the North Township trustee, saying that his office was receiving hundreds of calls.
A lot of these are happening in North Lake County in particular there because they're closest to the lake and some of the areas in the lowest areas up there where the flooding was.
They absolutely are. And so Frank reached out to the Red Cross about 1 o'clock on Sunday. His office was getting hundreds of calls. And what they did was immediately set up a small family assistance situation where they set up a facility at their Circle of Service building in Hessville on Sunday and Monday on Labor Day. And then Tuesday we moved over to Wicker Park. And what it did was it allowed the residents of North Township to come and fill out a disaster application for disaster assistance. And they received a $30 gift card through the township to assist with some cleanup supplies that they might need. The Red Cross was also able to supplement with some cleanup kits, which are big buckets that have cleaning supplies and masks and gloves and things like that in there, just to begin their immediate cleanup needs or help serve immediate cleanup needs. At the same time, the Red Cross was running case management for any of those clients that were identified as being displaced from their home. So if the home was still livable and the folks needed assistance with cleanup, you know, that was led by the North Township with some assistance from the Red Cross, but we were taking care of the folks that were displaced from their homes. And then from there, we worked very closely with North Township and then EMA from Lake County and Department of Homeland Security in Lake County to start doing more effective what we call damage assessment, really getting to the areas that were hit the hardest. We identified that East Chicago and Hammond were areas that were hit exceptionally hard through a heat mapping of just the number of applications. I don't have the exact number, but they took over 1,000 applications in
wow.
just 3 days through the North Township. Once we, through the emergency management and Department of Homeland Security, they were instrumental in getting that 211 website set up to start being able to take online application and information from all homeowners, not just North Township, because we did know that there was flooding in Crown Point. We knew there was some in Merrillville. We knew there was some in Gary and Lake Station. So we needed to be able to capture the names and addresses of all of the residents that were experiencing issues due to the flood.
Okay.
And the reason that's so important is this doesn't appear to be a large enough scale of a disaster to bubble up to what we would call a state declaration. But what it will do is any resources that are available, we have a stronger argument knowing the true scope of how many residents were affected and also knowing the areas that were affected. So it's really going to help the COAD, that Community Organizations Active in Disaster. That group is formed for basically the sole purpose of not just doing joint planning and training and prevention and preparedness, but also being able to provide an area-wide disaster coordination for what we call long-term recovery. So we can't know where we need to support and serve if we don't have the addresses and the information from the families affected.
Andrea, this also means, too, that you just don't have much time to get your information in, to get your disaster assessment form information in.
We would encourage residents to fill out that application or make the phone call to get the paper application as soon as possible. We have worked with the department that is going to be managing that the applications, and they will keep that open until we ask them to close it. But we do need that information as soon as possible so that, as Kristen said, we can make the argument in order to get any funds that might be available to help.
Okay. Now, Kristen, let me ask you before we wrap up today, are you seeing some abating? Are some of the problems starting to disappear? But, of course, people have long-term issues to deal with, and that's why they need the disaster relief, to be sure. Are there major problems still out there in North Lake County that still have to be dealt with?
There are. The issues are coming up in the cleanup in the basements, what we call muckouts, if you will. So the cleanup in the basements is the biggest deal. We had some homes on slabs that were unlivable. We at the Red Cross are not seeing an increased number of unlivable residents.
Mm-hmm.
So we do feel that we got to all of the folks who declared, who we were able to make contact with or who reached out to us to define that whether or not their location was livable or unlivable. So we're not seeing an increase in those cases. But what you are going to see is an increase in the need for the effective clean out of the basement. And one of the things, you know, that's important to know, and that's one of the things that the COAD is doing a great job in partnership with the United Way and some of their volunteer programming, is to get information out to as many residents as possible that have been affected by the flood in regards to what they can do themselves to help do the cleanup and mitigate the mold. And unfortunately, Chris, a lot of homes had sewage that came back in as well.
Yeah.
So the cleanup is significant. And bleach alone does not take care of mold on a porous surface.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think mopping with bleach water is effective, and unfortunately, it's just not. So while we are still seeing some issues like that, the other thing, as you said, it's not just a COVID environment right now with this flood disaster. But COVID, unfortunately, is affecting our ability to be able to go in as quickly as we normally might have through the COAD and do some muckouts and cleanouts for folks that are in a compromised position. They might have functional needs, health needs, the elderly. Volunteer organizations during the COVID restrictions are not entering people's homes to do volunteer work of any kind, such as muckouts and cleanouts of a basement. So it puts these residents in a little bit trickier position of being able to need to support themselves on a lot of the cleanouts. So one of the other roles that we're trying to manage is making sure that they have access to the resources and the information on how to do that. Because that right now, water it looks like is receding a bit, but once that happens, as we know, if we don't clean effectively, then we can have long-term issues with mold and sewage.
Well, let's certainly hope that we can get that taken care of as soon as possible. And we really appreciate the very complete information that you've offered up today about the problems that are still out there with many families, especially in North Lake County, that have had to do with the recent flooding. And Andrea, thank you very much for bringing us up today from the Lake Area United Way standpoint on being sure that residents who are affected by the flooding be sure to get their paperwork turned in, get that disaster assessment form filled out so they can get the financial help that they need. And we appreciate hearing from you later for an update if we can. And thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Andrea Pru-Bunicki is the Vice President for Community Impact for the Lake Area United Way. And Kristen Marlowe Kellerman is the Executive Director for the American Red Cross. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.